Let me ask you something. If there was something strange in your neighborhood, probably more specifically your own house, because I don't think that if it was going on in your neighborhood, it would be something that necessarily you would need to respond to, but we'll say there's something strange going on in your house. Dave, who are you going to call?
I'm going to call Tony Romo because he can predict the future. He knows what's going to happen right before it happens. So I figure if I have him there, he can tell me, okay, this is what's about to happen.
That's why he was able to... that's why he was able to retire, because he knew that he kept playing, then he was just going to keep getting laid. And...
He was. It's amazing that he can. He's calling these games, you know. And I don't watch the NFL, but
I didn't know the NFL still was going.
Yeah, it just barely, I think. But I guess he's an announcer now, and I guess like. When he announces, like, he calls these, like, he kind of reads the future on these plays. And, like, I guess he did that the other night pretty well with the Patriots. I guess he called a bunch of plays, like, that were key plays. He's like, well, if it were me, I bet I'd do this, and they did that. And I guess Tom Brady, of course, won the game because he's a cyborg or something. But
maybe, he's got some of the information that the Patriots have, where they videotape all the plays, and maybe they shared it with. They're like, hey, like, let's just totally fuck with everybody, and not only will we know what they're gonna do, but you know what we're gonna do, and you tell them.
Since you were pretty bad in when you were a quarterback at choking in the playoffs, then. Right. We feel bad for you, Tony Romo, even though you've been pulling all kinds of tail. But
is there? Yeah, he got Jessica Simpson before she got fat.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's probably no telling what tail he got that no one knows about too, or that
I'm telling you though. You know, I bet that all things considered. It's probably better to be with fat Jessica Simpson than not fat Jessica Simpson. You know, everybody has this like fixation on you know girls like women. I mean, looking a certain way, and they, you know, but honestly, in my experience. You know, if I had to pick which Jessica Simpson, like the Dukes of Hazzard Jessica Simpson, or now like the all you can eat buffet Jessica Simpson, I'm taking the fat Jessica Simpson because, you know, she's probably having a lot more fun now. She's indulging herself, and yeah, I don't know. I think the little bit bigger. They are the better it feels all things considered.
Well, she's making really good money now, I bet too. I think she had somebody smart with her money. It's like she started a clothing line, do all this stuff anyway. I think she ended up being worth a lot of dough
right.
At this point. She made some good investments with her money. And I don't think it was necessarily her. She doesn't seem like very suave in the money or in life in general.
You talking about the girl that thought that chicken of the sea was an actual chicken? I don't know.
Some investment guy somewhere was like, man, she's got all this money and I'm going to make some money off of her. There's some guy that knows what he's doing, you know.
Big old fat titties. so, but I, Is there any circumstances under which you might call Leslie Jones? If you had a maybe
call her,
you
know, call her what?
Well, you know what? I don't think. Maybe
call her a man. Yes.
I'm wondering if instead of Leslie Jones being the one that you would call if you saw something strange, maybe if you saw Leslie Jones, you might want to call.
Yeah, she would be on the strange end of that.
Yeah, because she is a she's a handsome woman.
She's very. She could, you know, she could help you build a fence or something like that. Yeah, dig some post holes.
Yeah, she could help you. Definitely help you build a solid fort, like one of those old forts where they take the logs and put like the old forts back in the day, and they stack the logs up and then anyway. But well, I don't know if you knew this, because normal people just ignored this, but Leslie Jones and some other women that aren't very funny, they all got together and they cosplayed as Ghostbusters, and somebody just happened to be there with a camera and filmed it, and it went about as well as you would expect. And the good thing to come out of it, though, this is the positive, is that Bill Murray, who has been unwilling to do another Ghostbusters, and the rumors were that he and Egon, I can't think, what's his name? Yeah, played Egon. Golly, I can't remember his name. I feel bad about that, too, because he's the only one that's dead. But the guy that played Egon, who was, you know, Harold Ramis. There we go. The rumor was that he and Harold Ramis had a falling out, and that was one of the reasons why Bill wasn't into it. If I know my facts right, which I probably don't, they had a falling out over Groundhog Day. They had some disagreements. I think Harold Ramis was like the director of Groundhog Day or something like that, and he and Bill Murray differed on what they thought that movie should be. And I guess even though it ended up being a pretty good movie, they just decided that they were done working together. And then I think, you know, probably also Bill Murray just didn't want to ruin something that had been one of his more cherished movies. But so for the last, you know, 40 years, Bill Murray has been unwilling to do a sequel. And, but now, because of how fucking stupid the Ghostbusters reboot was, Bill Murray's going to come back and do one. So, I think that we owe those ladies a big thank you that, they did what Bill Murray had tried to avoid doing for 40 years, to the point that now he's going to come back and try to save the franchise. But Leslie Jones wasn't happy about that. And she tweeted all manner of retardation and even invoked Trump's name as if he had something to do with it. As if anybody in Hollywood is listening to Trump these days. She's not happy about it. I feel like she should be pretty thankful, because she's not funny at all. And that first movie was probably a pretty sizable paycheck for her. And so if I was her, knowing what kind of performance I put in, I would have just sort of taken the money and faded into obscurity. But she's there, you know, this day and age, people of her ilk, they know no, their entitlement, knows no bounds. And so she's upset about it. But, you know, you didn't hear any of the other ones complain, I think, because they have some self-awareness. But it's, you know, it's an interesting thing, this sort of idea of, and I think it's what's going to happen every time they take something that has been, a franchise that's been centered around a man, and they make it about a woman. I think it's just going to suck because, not because, you know, women can't, like they're talking about the new James Bond's going to be a woman. And they do this Ghostbusters thing with women. I don't think it's because women are incapable of being funny or incapable of being, I mean, I'm kind of with Gavin McInnes on the idea that, like, I'm sick of seeing, like, Charlize Theron, like, in movies where she's kicking a bunch of guys' ass. Like, that's not how it would work. You know, probably would just take one solid punch from a guy and then the whole thing would be over. But, you know, it's just that it's, you know, things aren't so... Men and women are not equal. And that's not to say that they deserve unfair or unequal treatment. But, you know, something that has been, you know, like the Ghostbusters. It wasn't just... and, you know, I'll say this, too. I think that if they had... been less concerned with like social justice warrior shit, I don't think that it was impossible for them to reboot Ghostbusters with women and have it be funny. I think they could have done it. I don't think that Hollywood now is capable of doing it, but I do think that under the right circumstances you could have. But the dynamic of the original Ghostbusters and the actors that were the original Ghostbusters, I mean, you have people that are sort of legendary in Hollywood. I mean, you Bill Murray, obviously, Dan Aykroyd. And the way that they played off of each other, we were talking about this the other day. It's like, you know, Harold Ramis is kind of, his character was kind of the, you know, serious kind of geek. And then Dan Aykroyd's, character was, kind of the, goofy sort of comic relief. And then, you know, Bill Murray was, at the end of the day, it was sort of like centered around his character. And they had sort of a different dynamic the way he wasn't goofy necessarily. He's sort of sarcastic. And then you have Ernie Hudson, who was kind of like the everyman. He's sort of like what if a normal person was put in this situation and how they would react. And, you know, they complemented each other in the way that their characters, the different sort of characters. Well, I didn't watch the new Ghostbusters, but I did watch some different internet, some YouTube channels review it. And, you know, one of their, one of their critiques was, and these people, you have to understand too, were being bending over backwards not to say anything controversial. So, but one of the things that they were saying was, they were the new Ghostbusters. They were just all like the zany comic relief. That you didn't have the different dynamics of you know people, and that's sort of you know people talk about. I think her name is Melissa McCarthy. Like she's the new, you know, Chris Farley, and I just have a problem with the idea of comparing these women to a man like you know, it's so stupid to talk about this stuff because you feel like you have to constantly explain what you're saying. But Chris Farley was like a one of a kind. He was I don't even think that you can look at other male, you know, comedians and go, well, he's like Chris Farley. Because Chris Farley was just sort of this thing all his own. Melissa McCarthy looks like and I've actually seen some things where she's been fairly funny. But when she's not trying to be the woman Chris Farley. But that's what you get a lot. You get like, it's almost like they're telling her, hey, you know what? In this scene, I want you to be like, pretend like you're the woman Chris Farley. You know, it's like, it would be much better if they said, hey, why don't you be Melissa McCarthy? Because that's, you know, that would be awesome. But again, one of the things I think that Hollywood is not learning is that the things that make some of these movies great was just the people and the time. And that's not always something that you can just like go back and recreate at a whim. And you can just throw people into a scenario. But I think like Leslie Jones, it's like, it wasn't a good movie. Even people that wanted it to be a great movie, even people that just because in the age of Trump, a lot of this stuff comes down to, it would be Trump supporters who wouldn't like the first Ghostbusters. I mean, I think Milo Yiannopoulos got kicked off Twitter for being critical of that first or of that Ghostbusters. And so it turned into a whole thing, and it gained some notoriety just because there were people that went and saw that movie just because there were people that said they weren't going to like it, or they weren't going to go see it because it was women, which I think, again, I think that's silly. I don't think that you can look at it and say, well, it's women, so it's not going to be funny. But I think that you could look at it and say, well, those women aren't going to be funny, because for the large part, those women aren't funny. I would say the probably the exception is Melissa McCarthy, because I've seen her in a couple movies where I thought she had some funny parts. But like the other ladies that are like on Saturday Night Live, like Saturday Night Live isn't funny. And so, you know, the fact that they were just going to play like weird characters and that was going to be funny just because they were kind of zany, you know. But the movie didn't make, you know, it probably turned a profit just because of the whole social justice warrior edge. But the critics, even the ones that were going to give that thing a pass, specifically because they didn't want, you know, they didn't want the people, you know, people to win, that they were going to give the movie a good review, even those people had to hedge their bets and say, look, it's got some holes in it. So it just wasn't a great thing. And if you're going to redo Ghostbusters, it's got to be great. It's got to be hilarious. It's got to be iconic. You don't reboot that movie unless it's going to be great. And when you see from Leslie Jones this sense of entitlement that, like, well, hey, I deserve to have this thing. Well, it doesn't matter if I'm not doing well with it. I'm a black woman, and so it's not fair that you would take this away from me and put men back in here, because women are taking over the world. Everything's going to be better when women have it, you know. And it's not true. As ignorant as some of the shit that we talked about last time, it's the same idea of ignorance of saying that, you know, stuff will be better if women run it. Oh, no, it depends on the person. You know, there's a lot of stupid women out there, just like there's a lot of stupid men. It was MLK Day yesterday. And this is something that gets lost, where he said, I have a dream. Now, he specifically mentions his four children, but he basically, I have a dream, and it's sort of paraphrasing, that people we judge by the content of their character, not the color of their skin. Well, I think that should also go for, like, their sexuality, It's you just don't get to have things because you feel like you're entitled to them, and that's where Leslie Jones is at. And the fact that she's petty and has so little self-awareness that she would tweet about it, I think says more about her than it does about anything else. What do you think, Dave?
Yeah, I think you're right in the fact that, you know, you try to. Just because it's women in this role. I mean, you take a movie like the movie Alien with Sigourney Weaver, you know.
Right.
That's been out for about as long, maybe not quite as long as Ghostbusters, but it's like got a strong female. She's the lead, you know, and she does all these things. The difference is it's good writing. It's a compelling story. It's good, you know, it's a good story. Whereas... Right. The Ghostbusters with, or I like to call it Girl Busters. I was watching it. I actually watched about 20 minutes of it or so. And it was just, they tried really hard to push the feminist thing because they had, it's not Thor, but it's right. Thor's brother that looks like him. Anyway, they had him. He was like their.
I think it's Thor.
Is it Thor?
I think it might be Thor. Chris,
I can't remember. It's, but anyway, they had him. He was the like a secretary or something like that. He was ditzy. He was just kind of the how a lot of women view other women in movie parts, where it's like women are just there for eye candy, and that's what they were going for with this guy, you know. But the bottom line was, it was just bad, you know. Right. The writing was bad. That you had everyone trying to get a laugh. I mean, Leslie Jones was just kind of this, you know, all the black stereotypes that black people don't like. She was every single one of them in the movie, you know.
Right.
And then you have, the woman from Saturday Night Live, which I guess all of them are. Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. But, she's like Emily Blunt's faraway stand-in, you know. And right. it was just kind of this – it just didn't work. You know, right. That's the bottom line on it. It didn't work, you know. And you can try to push that stuff as much as you want. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, you know.
Right.
And it goes back, you know, to like I was thinking about the Alien movie and how – Sigourney Weaver's character. I always liked the movie Alien and some of the sequels. They were just a good movie because of their writing. It didn't you know, if you had plugged in somebody like, I don't know, a male role into right. that, it would have been, still would have been a good movie because the story was good and the writing and all that.
Right. But, you know, and even in Alien's a great example because the stuff that Sigourney Weaver does is believable.
Right.
You know, she's a badass because she does things that it's believable that a woman, you know, in that situation would be able to do.
Right.
And I think that, you know, even in movies where like the guy is, you know, doing, you know, punching things and you know, it's even in certain situations, it's not believable for a male to be, but whenever they have like Scarlett Johansson, you know, who's this little tiny person and she's in movies where she's beating up men, you know, it's just like, you know, you're just, that's just not how the world works. I don't even think like, you know, like if you take one of like the baddest ass women, like that cyborg, Chris Cyborg, that's in the UFC, like even if you put her in a situation where she had to take on like a man, well, like an average man, she'd probably be able to, you know, probably kick his ass. Just, you know, me definitely, if Cyborg came walking up, I would run away. And I probably would not be able to outrun her either. But if you put her in the situation where, like, you know, she's having to fight multiple guys that are being trained, well, I don't know. You know, I guess it's about as believable as Matt Damon being, like, a secret badass. And being able to, I don't
where
know,
he can know. He can like take out guys with a book or a magazine, yeah, or something, right, you know.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we sort of take for granted in Hollywood, but it's less believable in those, but it's not like that it's beyond the realm of possibility. And you know, a movie like Alien is a perfect example where if you had replaced Sigourney Weaver with a male part, it's a different movie. It wouldn't be the same. If you rebooted Alien and you put a guy there, it probably falls short, you know, of what the original movie was. Now the writing, if you had the same kind of good writing, then it would probably still stand up as a movie. But to compare it, you know, to compare that, there's a whole thing that's compelling about Alien because it is, you know, Sigourney Weaver, and she, you know, and that's kind of, you know, about the Ghostbusters things, like they didn't have the, and again, speaking as somebody who didn't see the movie, but, I watched like CinemaSins and Honest Trailers, and I watched people who broke down the movie. So again, I sort of am speaking from like secondhand critique experience, but like the whole whatever that Thor guy's name is, I can't remember, but you know, him being the eye candy in the Ghostbusters, you know, he's the secretary. Well, that wasn't the dynamic of the first one. They had the Janine, the goofy lady, and they, you know, what was funny about that was, you know, she was kind of this typical New York, you know, sounding, and she was actually hitting on Egon, you know, Egon, the for parts of the movie. And then the second one, you know, she ends up with Rick Moranis's character, and there's, you know, so they didn't have a role where they just marginalized somebody into like, okay, well, this is going to be sexy waitress, you know, even in the first Ghostbusters and the second one, the sort of like female interest was, it was Sigourney Weaver, and she was always portrayed as this like independent woman, you know, and Bill Murray was, you know, pursuing her, but she wasn't just the, you know, some hot chick that they were going to save. There was a whole dynamic there where, you know, it worked out different than sort of like these normal Hollywood tropes. And so, you know, and if you have any kind of humility and self-awareness, if you go through something like that and it's not, you're because it tells me Leslie Jones' reaction to it. It tells me that she doesn't really have any kind of reverence for the original Ghostbusters, if she feels like she's just sort of entitled to be in it. And if you don't have that kind of reverence, you shouldn't be in the movie, you know? You shouldn't be rebooting this franchise that's like a beloved franchise. You shouldn't get to shit on it just because you feel like the world owes it to you. You know, it's just I think it's just a huge commentary on her as a human being as anything else. So,
yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes with kind of the stuff that in pop culture now, these people are looking for something to be offended by, you know, to say the stuff she did. And she even threw Trump in there, which is another...
nothing to do with it.
Yeah, chalk up another point to Trump derangement syndrome. Yeah. You know,
I mean, what are you trying to score cheap points?
Right, but there's a lot of people out there that they're just looking for things to be offended by, you know, and I feel like probably the person that wrote and directed that movie, you know, they're the type of person that would watch Ghostbusters, the original couple, and just find every little thing that could be conceived as some sort of sexist, homophobic, racist thing, and just come up with it out of midair, you know. And we see examples of it all the time, you know, most, you know, especially in the media, you know, most recently with, you know, the people jumping the gun on the high school Catholic kids in DC, you know, just again, people seeing what they want to see before they actually look to see what happens, you know. Right. They just want to jump on the bandwagon.
A very nice segue.
I thought I'd try the segue thing out, see if I could do it. I always wanted to segue, but I can't afford one, and I feel that it's pretty impractical for my life. So,
yeah, you know, it's I have to think on some level, you know, and kind of the way all that stuff sort of worked out this weekend was very telling. The media revealed themselves, and the self-awareness is, I mean, it's sort of, it's like when you have somebody, like you have a friend that, you know, they're just, they go out and they get drunk and they make a fool of themselves every, you know, every weekend, and they just keep doing it, and people are, you know, the rest of the friends are going, oh, should we say something? It's kind of obvious at this point, you know, and they just have no self-awareness. And that's what I think the media does. They're just making a fool of themselves. They're just that drunk idiot that thinks that everything that they're doing is being widely accepted. You know, it started off the weekend with the whole BuzzFeed thing, where BuzzFeed reports on Friday that there's evidence, indisputable evidence, emails and documents. That's the words that these dumb fucks used. emails and documents. Like if Trump was going to tell his lawyer to lie to Congress, he was going to send it in a fucking email. Are you kidding me? The fact that these dumbasses fucking believe this shit, I think this was a whole troll by Trump. I really do. It's got Trump written all over it. But, so, you know, BuzzFeed reports that Trump directed Michael Cohen to lie to Congress about this whole Moscow project, which is not illegal. It's not illegal for Trump to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. So BuzzFeed reports this Friday morning, and the mainstream media does their part to pick it up and speculate heavily. They're not interested in verifying it. They're just, they all think that if they cross their fingers and hope upon hope and wish upon a wish, that it will be true. So they report on it, and they do a lot of this. They do a lot of where they go, okay, well, we have not been able to confirm that, but if it's true, it means that he's probably going to be impeached. He's probably going to go to jail. What do you think about that? Yes, well, we have to keep in mind this hasn't been verified, but if it's true, you know, and they played the but if game, which, as we all know, is a sucker's game. But so the media does this all day long. It's just breathless coverage. And they've got him. You know, they got the son of a bitch. And then, of all things, Robert Mueller's office comes out Friday evening and says that the BuzzFeed reporting is wrong. It's incorrect, and that they don't have anything, any documents, any emails supporting that. And so the media was super butthurt. Now, people like Chris Cuomo, instead of looking at his own network and himself and saying, golly, you know, we could have avoided this by following the tenets of journalism and trying to verify the things that we were going to report. Instead of doing that, he actually whines and opines that this is actually what Chris fucking Cuomo, this guy, I tell you what, he says, well, Robert Mueller didn't do us any favors, but he did Trump a favor. And so now when Trump says that you can't trust anybody but me, now the special counsel's office is backing him up. And he's mad that the special counsel's office would come out and counter this report and basically call fake news out for being fake news. Now, it would have been very easy for Chris Cuomo to just not report things that had not been verified. It's sort of one of the basic tenets of journalism is that you verify shit before you report it, but they didn't do that. They don't do that in the age of Trump. The more that they want something to be true, the more they're willing to just report it without any kind of verification. And so that was strike number one on fake news media. And golly, I'm not even going to mention this right now, but we watched this show, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and golly, man, it's just, it's, they have the subtlety of herpes, and they have the political leanings of like a 18-year-old gender studies person, you know, that has no idea about anything, and they just make these stupid, shitty, snarky little political references throughout the show, and just fucking ruins it. Just shut the fuck up and do your show, trying to make fucking political commentary. I mean, it's propaganda at this point. You're literally part of a propaganda machine, you fucking cucks. But so that was strike one, was the BuzzFeed article. Then do you want to talk about the second thing?
Yeah, the second excuse me. The second thing was the was basically they had the pro-life march in Washington, D.C. this weekend. And so I guess I'll try to. So the mainstream media first reported there was this video out of this guy in his, they say he's in his 60s. He looks older than that, but he's a Native American Indian.
And a veteran.
Yeah, and a veteran, supposedly. And the first video that came out was basically made it seem like these kids had come up to him and were kind of harassing him. And that's how it was reported. And people jumped on the bandwagon, you know, liberals, even conservatives, a lot of them just jumped the gun and they just start, you know, I mean, some horrible things. Like there was a guy who's a Disney director, I think, or producer. And he talked about, you know, these kids should be put in a wood chipper and killed. They were doxing these kids as far as putting their information out, like saying this, who they are, they live here, you know. They were threatening to shut down some of the kids' parents' businesses, you know. I mean, just all these terrible things on social media. Well, then the full video comes out, which is like 2 hours long, but somebody went through, watched it, and set up time references of where to look anyway. What really happened was these kids were there for the pro-life march, and they had gone to an area to kind of hang out for a few hours and wait till their next, you know, I guess where they were going to go next. And there's a group, which I didn't know existed, where it's these black guys who are the Hebrew, I forgot what they were called. They're like Hebrew. There's Hebrew Zionist black guys. Anyway, they believe that, you know, they are the chosen ones and that white people are the devil.
Right. They believe they descended from Moses.
Yeah. That's what it is. And so they actually were the ones who started yelling at the kids, calling them dusty crackers and
gay slurs.
You know, they were calling them gay slurs.
Just all kinds of shit. Not to interrupt you, but Ryan Fournier on Twitter, which is he's some kind of a political commentator, whatever. He says it turns out Nathan Phillips, which is the Native American video, says it turns out he may have lied about serving in Vietnam. So there's that.
Yeah. And then as these, you know, black Hebrews is what they go by, I guess, they were taunting the kids. And this Native American guy, this Nathan Phillips guy, comes up and he starts in on it, banging his drum and telling them to go back to Europe, some other things. You know, I can't remember what all. But anyway, the truth came out that the kids were just basically hanging out and these other groups were taunting them. And so you had a lot of people start backtracking and apologizing, and some of them kind of doubling down. You know, I think I want to say it was CNN. This sounds like them. They had a guy who was still, you know, he said, well, maybe it didn't go down like they said, but, you know, just look at the kid's face. You know, you can tell he's a racist by looking at it. So, I mean, they're just, you know, there's some people that are just highly delusional and won't even admit when they're wrong, even when it's right there in front of their face, right. You know. And it's just a sad commentary that, you know, there were people calling for the death of these kids, you know, that they should die. They were trying to dox them.
There's a writer for SNL that offered blowjobs to anybody who would punch them.
Yeah.
She says,
yeah,
I will blow whoever manages to punch that MAG kid in the face.
Yeah, it's just insanity out there. I mean, it really is when you think about, like,
not that a blowjob from her just, would be anything out of the ordinary.
Or, you know, it's probably not an incentive necessarily. Right. So, it'd be like, well, I was going to punch that kid in the face, but I don't know. You know, I don't really want that from her.
Or there's guys going, well,
but yeah, that's kind of
I can either punch this kid in the face and get her to blow me, or she'll just blow me anyway.
Right. Yeah, it's, yeah, so that's kind of the other snafu. Like, again, it goes back to these people are just looking for an excuse to be offended, or to, you know, these kids were wearing MAGA hats. That's the only reason this was seen the way it was.
Right.
Had they not been wearing MAGA hats, it would have just been probably never even a story, right, to be honest. It would have just been like this, basically chalked up to, well, there are a couple of older people that were crazy and messing with these kids.
Yeah.
Life
goes well, on. And it's like Paul Joseph Walker does it, or Watson does did a video where he's talking about everybody, you know, freaked out that this kid was smirking. That was what a lot of the hullabaloo was about, was this kid was smirking. And so he did a video that's pretty funny, and he's got little things. He, like, you know, for a while there on Twitter, they were putting out all these different AR attachments. Like, funny things, and like one of them now that he showed was the smirk attachment. It was just that kid's face smirking on the end of the AR. It was like, you know, anyway, there's just a bunch of, you know, he's basically talking about how people are freaking out because this kid's smirking. It's like, dude. Well, if you, like, for all that those kids were sitting there enduring, like, you know, because even, like, Rush was talking about it, and at first it kind of looks like that the Nathan Phillips guy is maybe walking up to help the kids because they're just, you know, they're getting yelled at by these fucking retards, man. Like, there's just no better way to put it. They're like yelling all these stupid slurs and just, you know, being whatever. Like, I couldn't just stand there. Like, I don't know, man. I think I'd want to go ahead and throw down with them dudes. They're gonna be yelling a bunch of stuff at me, but I'm not Catholic. But this dipshit with the fucking drum, like, they kind of wade into the middle of this, you know, ridiculous scene where these people are attacking these high school kids, and he just kind of starts banging this drum and like trying to get in these kids' face with this drum. It's like, well, what the fuck are you doing? Like, seriously, it's the whole thing is just, it doesn't, all of the people that were being, you know, they weren't acting like adults should act. They all get glorified by the media simply because the kids weren't a MAGA hat. It's like, you know, we're just at a point in time where you have real hatred. Somebody who has a history degree, you always look back, and even just being in high school, you know, you look back and you hear about, like, Nazis and some of the different awful things, you know, atrocities that happened through fascism and then through communism, where millions of people were killed. And you look back on that and you go, I can't imagine somebody being so hateful that they would just, you know, murder people that they don't like by the millions. You know, when you're a kid looking into this stuff, you can't fathom the idea of, like, you know, Hitler and he hates these people so much that he's willing to just send people out and just mass try to commit genocide on a whole race. And how could these like SS troops and these other Germans that were supposedly just normal people, how could they go out and commit these atrocities? But it's starting to be something where you go, okay, well, they must have felt like these liberals feel today, that there's, you know, they're angry at something that's not real. They're angry at something that doesn't exist anymore. And this kind of ties into the Ghostbusters thing, because that people are so, when they reboot these movies, they're so eager to recreate, magic that had happened previously. You know, they're nostalgic when they go back and watch these movies, and they go, man, I wish we could recreate that in a new format today, if we could get that magic. And, you know, obviously they didn't know how to go about it with this new, like with the female Ghostbusters, but that's what they were trying to do. They were trying to recreate a franchise. They were trying to find the same, you know, magic that went into the first one. But they didn't, you know, everything is not the same. Many things are different. Our culture is vastly different. A lot of the jokes and things that they did in the first couple Ghostbusters, our society is just very different. Mm-hmm. And the same kinds of things aren't funny. Well, it's kind of the same thing with a lot of these activists. They look back on a time in this country where there was like these virulent racists. They look back in like the 50s and the 60s and even before, in like Jim Crow, where there were these literally ignorant racist people. Now, they ignore the fact that those people were all Democrats. They ignore the fact that those people were just following their political rhetoric of the same kinds of politicians. A lot of them fathers of politicians of today, from the same families, like the Gores and the Romneys and these people. And they want to try to recreate this like social activism for these people that went and were sprayed by water hoses and had dogs sicked on them. And these like freedom riders in the South that would go and, you know, throw down, and truly brave people. But things aren't the same, and those kind of pervasive attitudes, they don't exist anymore, largely because of the people that fought against them, you know, back in the day, the Martin Luther Kings and the Rosa Parks and all the people that fought against racism and that were successful. And that they defeated that attitude to where most people nowadays, they don't think like that. And so, you don't have people in the media and these activists, they're so eager to find enemies anywhere they can because they're desperate to have something to fight against. They don't realize that they're the bullies now. They're the ones that are oppressive. They're the ones that are full of anger and hate. They want to look at this kid wearing a MAGA hat and think that, oh, he's such a hateful racist. But he's just a fucking kid. And the hate and the racism were surrounding him. It was coming from the black Israelite peoples. And it was coming from this fucking, Native American dumbass that comes wading up to him. And you know, I am eternally appreciative. Now, whether or not this guy served, I guess, is under question. But I appreciate any veteran. But it just doesn't give you a license to do whatever the fuck you want to do. It's just all things are not the same. And there's a desperation in these people to find the monsters, to find the enemies, to find somebody to oppose. And they just don't exist. And what's happened is, and this is a quote from Nietzsche, It says that those who battle monsters must take great care in not becoming monsters themselves. And that's what the left has had happen to them. They are the monsters. They're the ones that are the hateful bullies. They're the ones who are racist. They're racist against white people. They're bigots. They judge people based on their skin color, how they look, what their sex is, what their sexual orientation is. That's how they judge people. They don't judge them based on what their character is, or all the important things that you get to choose. They judge people based on things that they have nothing to do anything with. And, you know, we're just at this really sad point in time where you have just a bunch of idiots who they couldn't honestly stand up to the realities. If they were back in the 50s, they wouldn't be able to stand up to the water hoses and the dogs. You know, these people don't have the kind of backbone to stand up to the kind of racism that they wish existed now. And, you know, that they've made Trump into this big villain just because he decided to pick a different political party. It's just really telling. I showed somebody the other day the picture of Trump getting an award from the NAACP. He's standing with Muhammad Ali and Rosa Parks, and he's getting an award for all the work that he does in the inner city and the way that he helps out minorities. If you look at the way the man's works, you don't find the thing that these people in the media have created. And it just comes down to their own ignorance. They're ignorant, hateful people. And just like, at the time back then, it was difficult, but the only way to deal with that kind of attitude, pervasive attitude, is to stand up and to call it out and to fight it where you can. Even though the entire system would be working against you, it's actually, the irony is that what those people want to be, they're actually creating the conditions for people like us to be, because they are the hateful bigots. They try to create these straw men in these like high school kids or in Trump or in anybody who follows Trump. They want to say that the MAGA hat's like the swastika, but that's not the reality. The reality is that they are the representation of the swastika, and the kind of freedom fighters and the people that they long to be, that's what we're becoming, because we're having to oppose their hateful bigotry, their racism, their ignorant ideas, their rush to judgment. And, it's ironic. It's sad. I shudder to think the kind of world sometimes that my kids are growing up in. For one, I worry the kind of things that they're going to face. And then I also worry about the constant propaganda that I'm going to have to battle against. I'm going to have three kids who are going to be as stubborn and as hard-willed as I am. And I'm just going to have to be constantly, if they're in public school, and even if they're not, I'm just going to have to be constantly fighting this media narrative that they're going to get force-fed all the time. It's scary. It's scary to think that either my kids are going to be the kind of the outcast that are Christians and know what's right and stand up for, conservative values, and they'll either be on the outside and have to deal with all of the negative consequences of that, or, they'll buy the propaganda, they'll buy the media narrative, they won't listen to me, they'll rebel against me, and then, They'll just be fucking idiots like the rest of them. You know, so it's just tough. You know, it's tough as a parent. I've got they're all very young now, so I'm just going to start pounding rhetoric into their heads while I can. So, you got anything else you want to say on the fake news media debacle, the social debt? They call it it's hashtag verified bullies on Twitter, because that's what these people are. They're trying to fucking say that these kids have punchable faces and stuff like that. It's like, Paul Joseph Watson he's great, man, because he even called the guy out. He's like, this guy says that who has a more punchable face than this kid? I don't know. Maybe you do. And shows the guy's picture. It's just like, yeah, you know what? These people that talk about this, they talk about punching these kids and stuff, have never been in a fight in their life. My God. Oh, it's been a long time since I've been into a fight, but I kind of would love to fight one of these people. I'm not saying that I'm right, but you know, it's hard not to get dragged down to that level.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, the kid thing, your kids growing up in this, I think, you know, it's different for them because they have the internet and things. And they can sift through a lot of the stuff. I think that, you know, we grew up in a time where there wasn't any alternative, you know, as far as what was on TV or in the newspaper is all you had. And then the generation before us as well, our parents' generation, that's all they had. But now with this going on, and especially the media getting called out on it, you know,
right.
I think there's less and less people buying into it. I mean, and this weekend were two excellent examples. I mean, on display of just how biased and even just wrong, you know, regardless of what side you're on, just jumping to a, you know, to judge something that just wasn't there, just off like a little snippet, you know, actually looking for the whole story. Excuse me, instead of just seeing a picture or a 10-second video clip, you know what I mean?
Right.
Actually going through and figuring out, okay, this is what really happened. Okay, now I see it. You know, hopefully the more these things will happen, there'll be plenty more, trust me. You know,
right.
I think there'll be at least 6 more years of this type of stuff. Yes, I'm talking about Trump winning election again. And, I just think with that happening over time, there's going to be a lot of people, and there already has been, in my opinion, a lot of people see it for what it is and take steps to either, you know, they're either the biggest thing I can offer to somebody to change, you know, how they view the news is to not watch it for about a month and
or ever again.
Or ever again. Yeah. I did this years ago. When my wife and I were first married, I just got sick of watching the local news. We were living in Tulsa at the time, but it was just all these bad things were happening, and I get bad things happen, but it was like kids getting killed or, right, you know, somebody getting shot for no reason, and that's all it was, and I finally got sick of it. Just turned it off, you know. I turned off all, I don't have a subscription to a paper. I don't watch cable news. I don't watch any news anymore. If I want to find the weather, I just go to my weather app, you know,
right,
or sports or something. And that's the biggest thing I can tell people is if they turn it off for a month and then just kind of reevaluate like how they view things, you know, it's a lot better because I mean that the majority of news is negative in a lot of ways, you know, they kind of keep you in like a state of fear or worry or even anger, you know, a lot of times over stuff. And so you have to kind of limit yourself to it. And, you know, first thing is get out of it. And then as you get back into looking into some things, find different sources and look at things logically and in a real life perspective and not in a Washington, New York, LA, DC bubble that they most of these journalists have, you know, and they're, you know, a part of it is they're trying to make a name for themselves too. They figure if they can get out there and make the establishment media happy, they can get propped up in some way.
Well, and they just, you know, it's one of those things where I think that they're in the entertainment business. They're no mm-hmm. longer in the business of journalism. You know, there was a big scare right before Trump was elected. See, Trump saved the media. If Hillary had gone in, you know, she would have ruled the media with sort of an iron fist. They would have yielded to her. You know, you would have still had conservative media probably kind of working overtime, but that stuff would have been largely quashed by her administration. She would have really controlled the flow of information. And so there was just a genuine concern that, like, print media was going away. Trump was calling them the failing New York Times because at that time, before he saved them by becoming the story all the time, you know, and so there was a lot of those media sources that were going to go away. And you're seeing it even with little ones like the Weekly Standard and Vox and places that aren't going to last much longer. If they can't sell you on the entertainment value, you know, they've already have sort of abandoned the idea of objective journalism, and so now it's purely entertainment. It might as well be the Trump soap opera. Are we gonna get them this week? Is this gonna be the thing? Is this gonna be the time? You know, and CNN. CNN is, I think, the most egregious case because I think a lot of these outlets are fairly self-aware to where they say, okay, well, you know, we're sort of in the bag here, and you know, we're it's a thinly veiled effort to appear objective, but whenever they get called out, they'll sort of am I biased? Yes, I'm biased. I hate Trump and everybody that supports him. But like CNN is so egregious because they get so butthurt whenever you call them out, whenever they're called fake news, they just can't fucking stand it. And they are. They're sort of the originators of fake news. We talked about it a little bit last time where long before the days of Trump, when people called them the Clinton News Network, they're a bunch of Democrat activists. They're partisan politicians, you know, posing as objective journalists. And just eventually, people just, when they don't believe you anymore, they don't buy that credibility. You know, either own it or don't. And if you don't, then you don't, you know, you don't get to go around and cry like Chris Cuomo did. He blames Robert Mueller for coming out and telling the truth. He's angry about it. He was angry that they didn't just let the lie go and didn't just let the media wildly speculate for the rest of the weekend and make all these accusations, because Michael Cohen is going to be testifying in front of Congress. And so nothing was going to be resolved for like another week or two. And they just wanted that to play out. They wanted to be able to speculate. And the fact that Mueller's office came out and nipped it in the bud, you know, and people like Chris Cuomo get mad about that. Well, if you had never reported on something that was unverified, then you wouldn't have looked bad. You can't blame Robert Mueller for coming out and telling the truth because you went off half cocked. I mean, that just, again, and when you look at Chris Cuomo, who's his brother? His brother's the Democrat fucking mayor of New York, you know? Or is he the governor? No, is he the governor? No, he's
He's the governor, I believe, because the mayor is de Blasio.
De Blasio, okay. So he's the governor. Yeah. I don't, you know, shows how much I know, but so, you know, his brother's the governor of New York. His dad was a politician. And of course, he is there selling the propaganda. So the idea that he's an objective reporter, the idea that he's not biased, is, I think, ridiculous. And people kind of look at the whole deal where he called he called Don Lemon petty the other day, because Don Lemon was like talking about how he, if he would have been Obama at George H.W. Bush's funeral, that he wouldn't have shaken Trump's hand, and Cuomo calls him petty. and Don Lemon says, I'm just real. And then Cuomo said, yeah, real petty. they kind of had a little spat there.
Love your spat.
And, you know, people like, yeah, well, this kind of shows that Cuomo, no, it just shows that Cuomo has to deal with Don fucking Lemon every day. And even if you're a partisan hack, Don Lemon is still a bridge too far, you know, because Don Lemon is so fucking delusional that I think that at some point he's in real danger of, if he just leans back too far, the gravitational pull from his ass might suck his head in and he might just disappear, break on through to the other side. But you know, it's a symptom of a bigger problem, but it's also just the idea that the media is in the entertainment business. They're not just reporting the news. You know, there's a reason why, and when you go on and you look at like Facebook and things, it's all clickbait heavy type stuff. It's all who died, who, you know, what terrible things happened. And that, I guess it's arguable whether some of that stuff is absolutely essential that people know. And I think that there is a place for knowing what's going on in your community, knowing what's going on in the world. I think it's important on some level to sort of be connected, but 95% of it's just noise nowadays, and being able to accurately filter out. And, you know, I just like, for me, you don't ever have to watch fake news again. You know, there's no obligation anymore. When you know it's fake news now, you just don't have to consume it. And I think that's a smart thing. I think what you're saying is pretty relevant too. And I think that it's a pretty essential to take breaks. But I think that as far as like places like CNN or New York Times, Washington Post, you just don't ever have to read them again, because you can't get reliable, objective reporting from them. And if you can't get that, then don't watch them. And hey, I'm not saying like Fox News is any better, because in a lot of ways they're not. I think that Fox has some good people. I think that like Tucker and Sean Hannity, and at times Laura Ingraham, and, you know, Lou Dobbs, I think individually, like the shows that they have, can be very, not objective necessarily, because I don't think that like Tucker and Sean are objective, but you sort of are able to balance out. I think where they're useful is you're able to like balance out the media narrative by hearing the other side. And that may be kind of the only way to really get a clear picture of what's going on, is because you're not going to get anybody that gives it to you objectively. So once you sort of hear what the media is, what the mainstream media's narrative is, then you listen to Tucker, Sean Hannity, or Rush Limbaugh, you know, and you get the other side, and then you say, okay, well, you know, where's the truth? And honestly, I think it's when you listen to like Tucker or especially like Rush, they'll be upfront and honest and say, look, you know, I am a political operative. Rush has always said that he is a conservative. He's trying to destroy liberalism. But at the same time, they sort of have more of an impetus to give the truth. And I think that you can sort of separate facts from political commentary. But sometimes there, everything is a everything is coming from a political premise. So they, you know, their whole premise for stories is factually incorrect. So, you know, I think it's sort of a different. I think it's a different thing. And people might disagree, but there's a lot of facts that they seem to want to leave out of stories, and then they just again they come from a false premise. They come at things with like this social justice warrior outlook, which is so very flawed, because again, it assumes first and foremost that stories and facts are relevant in comparison to whatever like your skin color is and what sex you are and who you like to have sex with.
Yeah, that's the thing taking a break will do, is it will help you see all of that stuff, the bias, right, and just the sins, in a lot of cases, just the stupidity and they're trying really hard, you know, because when you're out living your life every day and you're off of social media and off of the news and you're just going to work, you're doing your thing with your family, and then you go and read something that's just totally out of left field, literally, you know, it really opens your eyes to just how stupid a lot of it is, you know, when you read it and you're just like, who thinks like this, you know, like what these people need to have, you know, they need to have kids and like experience some things in life and
they need Jesus.
Yeah. And live their life, you know, not sit around and think of ways to write articles about, you know, against Christianity and kids wearing MAGA hats.
Well, I think this has been informative. Do you have anything you want to say in closing?
You know, if you haven't seen the Ghostbusters with with the all-female cast, just don't. It's not very good. I mean, unless you like to watch bad movies.
Just pretend like it didn't happen.
Yeah, just exit. Be like, oh,
just pretend like it's a different movie that has nothing to do with the original ones. But you know what? On the other side of it, you could also look at it as sort of a necessary evil, because it's how we'll get the real Ghostbusters 3.
Right. Sometimes we have to go through trials and struggles in life to get the things that we need and want. So
to get the things that we deserve.
Right. That's how we'll look at that.
Well, for Maggie Dave, this is and Glenn Keck, we're signing off here, and have a good day.